For our final subject, we're going to look at gold. Gold. What do you think about gold? Precious metal, good investment. Depends upon what day and whether the market's up on it or not. It's interesting that there's 426 verses, if you didn't do any look, that mention gold in the Bible. Mentions it more than any other metal in there. And it's interesting, we're going to look at some things. I'm going to show you how I got my calculator out when I was doing my study here, and we're going to hopefully get you visualization of some things a little bit different than you may have had before. At least it did to me in my study. Gold is a precious metal. Who made it precious? Who made it something so valuable? God. Basic law of economics is something that is precious. And what makes gold better than silver? It's more rare than silver. The properties of it, it's heavier, it's base, it can give a greater shine. Nowadays they're using platinum a lot, even. That has become something. Metal is not mentioned in the scripture, but we know gold is a precious metal, and it's one we're very wary of, and God uses it enough in His scripture, helps us better understand it. I'm not going to ask you the obvious question. Instead, I'm going to say, where's the first geographic place in Genesis where gold is mentioned? It's right after the Garden of Eden. It's somewhere. Genesis 2, verses 11 and 12. And it's interesting where God tells us this. Now, the name of the first thing, you're right, it's in the area of the Garden of Eden, because it says the Garden of Eden is in between these landmarks. And the first landmark that God gives, Moses the author here, in verse 11, the name of the first of the rivers is Pishon. Do we know where that is? All we know is where we think it was. It doesn't really exist today. The two of the four rivers that are mentioned, the Tigris and the Euphrates, we understand those and we know those and we can show them on a map. But the other two listed here, we don't know. And it made me question when I was looking at this. We always thought, okay, the flood changed where those rivers were. Right? It could have. But wasn't Moses writing after the flood? Using landmarks that he knew? We don't know. We don't know. God gave him these words, yes. That God want us to find the Garden of Eden? Absolutely not. But in verse 11, it's interesting. It says the name of the first is Pishon, and it is one which skirts the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold. And the gold of that land is good. Bdellium and the onyx stone are also there, two other precious minerals. Havilah, that's where the first place it's mentioned in the scripture. In 2 Kings 9, 28, during whose reign as king do we find out about this one? If it's in 1 Kings, it'll be Solomon. If it's 1 Samuel, you could say Saul. If it's 2 Samuel, you could say David, making your guesses. 1 Kings 9, 28. And here it's talking about, and we're going to come back to this area of Scripture in 1 Kings, because Solomon has a very strong tie to a lot of the verses that have gold mentioned. And we're going to quantify some of that information that the Scriptures give us too. Basically, it just says that the fact is, and they went to Ophir, that's at 20, verse 28, and they went to Ophir, and acquired 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. You jump over to chapter 10, verse 11, and it mentions it again. Also, the ships of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir, brought great quantities of almug wood and precious stones from Ophir. Ophir is a place geographically that's south of the Gulf, I think is where it is down there. It's basically, they sent ships It's not that Solomon was known for a large navy, but they had ships. He had shipyards down there at the very base of Sinai. And some of the Ophir is thought to be over down in Africa, the northern African section. That's part of the old legacy. And if you ever look at the legends, the concepts of King Solomon's Mine, which was a nice fictional book, but that's the basis of which they try to use a little bit of scripture to find that supposed mine where they got all this gold. The third place that's mentioned is 2 Chronicles 9:14, also associated with Solomon, was Arabia. Arabia sent gold to Solomon. 2 Chronicles 9:14, besides what the traveling merchants and traders brought, and all the kings of Arabia and the governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. Whether they got it from there itself or whether they had acquired it, regardless, gold was coming out of there to Solomon. Gold holds an appeal to all of us. It's one we have to be very careful. It's something that's beautiful to the eye, valuable. We have gold, we take good care of it. Concepts of it being an investment. Were there wealthy men in the scripture? Yeah. Who would you say was the first wealthy man you would think of?
Solomon.
Who? Job. It was about the same time as him. Abram. Genesis 13:2. Well, like I say, it's thought to be the patriarchal. Joe's saying Job is thought to be during the patriarchal time.
Genesis 11.
Well, we don't have that exact either. I mean, Genesis 11, it had to do with, I mean, this, with Joe's comment here, and I'll bring it up. The fact that Job was offering sacrifices for his family, we know it's well before the Mosaic age where only the priests would give the sacrifices. Do you have another? Okay. Genesis 13:2. Okay. Abram was very rich in what? Not just, what was livestock also referred to? Any kind of animals. Horses, cattle, oxen, sheep, donkeys, livestock. He had a lot of it. But it's interesting to say, what else was he rich in? In silver and to gold. Never thought about Abram being wealthy with gold. Just didn't click in my mind. I know he had a lot. He had a lot of servants. He had an army of his own that had to go after to get back Lot when he was captured. And his son inherited a good part of that wealth, would you say? Isaac in Genesis chapter 24. Here we have the servant that was sent to find the bride for Isaac. This servant was carrying a lot of gold with him. It's not quantifiable here, but it shows part of the wealth that's there. Verse chapter 24, verse 22. So it was when the camels had finished drinking that the man took a golden nose ring wearing half a shekel, which is, a shekel's about 74 pounds, I think I looked at in comparison. That's one of the weight I looked up in this thing, so we can quantify that. It's the equivalent. Let's say, hold on a second. Now, talent is 25. Yeah, the talent is 20 is approximately 74. I'm sorry, the shekel is much less in weight, but it is still a gold piece here. Two bracelets for a wrist weighing 10 shekels of gold. So there's some gold that's being given not only to Rebekah right here. Look at the verses 16 and 17. I'm sorry, that's the wrong one I'm looking at there. Verse 35. The Lord had blessed my master greatly, and he has become great, and he has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male and female servants, and camels and donkeys. And then verse 53, this servant also has enough to where he brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, and clothing, and gave it to Rebekah, and also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. He came laden with a lot of gifts to present to whoever God led him to for Isaac. So we can see that there was wealth in gold, as the scripture says, for Abram and Isaac. Now let's look at the guy we'll look at for a little bit here that is known to be the gold guy. We'll look at that here. I've got all that quantifiable also. It's okay. That's what we're going to see. 1 Kings chapter 10. You're jumping ahead of me here. Did you look at my notes? 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 14. And 16 and 17. Then Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold. Who was Hiram? We looked at him previously when we were looking at horses and stuff. Hiram, king of Tyre, T-Y-R-E. And what was he known for? What was his kingdom known for?
Cedar.
The cedar tree. And the cedars of Lebanon, which is known now, that's basically what was used by Solomon. And he worked a deal out with Hiram. And they became very close as far as that's concerned. Now it says in verse 16 and 17, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up, taken Gezer and burned it with fire, had killed the Canaanites who dwelt there, and had given it as a dowry to his daughter. And Solomon built these other cities. We had looked at basically the situations of Egypt had a lot of gold they brought. Oh, jumping over to 10. Okay, I was in the wrong chapter there. Chapter 10, verse 14. I'm sorry. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold. Now, we'll get to this in a second here and show you the quantification of what that is. The weight of gold, okay, verse 16. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 shekels of gold went into each shield. He also made 300 shields of hammered gold. 3 minas of gold were into each shield. And where did the king put that? Into the palace? Where does it say, the scripture say, where did Solomon put those shields of gold? In the house of the forest of Lebanon. You ever heard of that before? Go back to chapter 7 here in 1 Kings. Here's where Solomon is building his personal residence. King Solomon took 13 years to build his own house. So he finished all his own house. And it talks about that's where all these shields of gold were going. Not anything on his palace. I mean, he had one fine house there. It took you 13 years to do it and he had this much gold. Now, I went and looked up online today just so we can quantify this and start looking at this and the concepts of gold and how much it's talking about here, potentially. Today's value, I looked it up this morning, an ounce of gold, $1,829. Now, does the Bible tell us stuff in ounces? No, we just mentioned minas, shekels, and talents. Now, the source I got is just, I mean, I'm just going to use that. I mean, there's differing values and there's differing opinions of what each of them were. But I thought it was amazing just to see what we're dealing with here. Those small shields that were made out of 3 minas of gold each, worth $110,618 each. How many were made? 300 of them. That's $33,185,000 of the small shields. The large shields, says they're made out of, back in verse 16, 600 shekels of gold. That's a lot. That's a greater weight. And the difference between large and small, yes, you know that's bigger. Large shields, $439,000 approximately, using that value per ounce for each one. How much total? Well, there were 200 of them. $88 million equivalent of gold shields in his personal residence. Ostentatious, do we think? A bit much? Yeah. What was God, back in Deuteronomy, when God told the nation of Israel what to do and what, when they got a king, this king was not supposed to do certain things. What was one of those things? What? Not to accumulate wealth. Does that look like what Solomon's doing? I mean, God blessed him, right? The scripture says because Solomon asked for wisdom and didn't ask for riches, God said he was going to do what to him? Give him the wisdom, but he was also going to give him the wealth. So this wealth came from God. But with that wealth, what was Solomon's responsibility? Was he not the one that would be held responsible for the gift that God gave him? And the way he used it? Now, personally, I don't think this looks like with this much in your personal residence. And there's no telling how much other gold. And we know that there were lots of other golds because it says Solomon had vessels of gold that he drank out of. And those were in his house. And all the things that he did, very showy. And it says in the scripture, no other kings in the world were this wealthy. I mean, it talked about Solomon's wisdom, but it said no other kings were as wealthy as Solomon was. That's the next step. We're going to look at his annual income. Solomon's annual gold income. Where can we find that? That's back in verse 14. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold. Now it says talents. Talents, which each talent is like 74 pounds of gold. How much is this a year? $1.5 billion approximately. And how many years did Solomon reign? 40 years. Nice retirement fund. He was having this money. It says it came in yearly. It doesn't tell us what year it started. It doesn't tell. But this was an annual amount of gold that was coming to him. Was that the only source of income the scripture talks about, or only source of riches that came to him? No. Fabrics, silver, jewels. What? Vices. Spices. Yeah. Spices. Horses. All these things that Solomon accumulated with this wealth that was coming to him. Did he use it well? No. Did it become... It's kind of the thing to say. Were his riches evil? Were his riches sinful? No. Not in by itself. It's how he reacted to him.
You got to think he has a national economy and everything.
Yep. Solomon, under Solomon's reign, what Dave was mentioning there, under Solomon's reign, the kingdom of Israel was the largest it had land-wise it had ever been. And yeah, he has a larger infrastructure. He has to pay for army. He has to pay for his houses, whatever. 300 wives, so much alimony in case, whatever. The concept, we quantify this, and we know that, but we have to look at, wasn't Solomon also getting free labor? He was using slave labor, the scripture says, to get and build a lot of the things he did. Again, that was something that God told the people was going to be part of their punishment because they wanted a king other than God. You would be slaves. You would have to do things for your king. Solomon did exactly that. Nebuchadnezzar, how wealthy was he? When you attribute gold, when you think of gold in Nebuchadnezzar, what's the first place that gold is attributed to him? It's in a dream. What was the dream about? It's in Daniel chapter 2. Didn't Nebuchadnezzar have a dream that He told his wise people they had to not only tell him what the dream was, they had to interpret it. What was the dream of? A large statue and the head of gold. And it's great because Daniel went through and yes, he told them exactly all the details of the dream and then went and tells us what that prophecy was broken down. And he told Nebuchadnezzar he was the head of gold. Do you think that made Nebuchadnezzar get all puffed up? Yeah, probably did. See, later in his life, he got so full of himself, God had to bring him down a peg or two. Punish him. Was Nebuchadnezzar someone who looked at God in a favorable status? Later in life, yeah. He recognized the God of Daniel, though, did he not? At this point in time, yeah, he brought Daniel up because your God is doing right. Your God told you this dream as well as the interpretation. And then in chapter 3, we have the little bump again where Nebuchadnezzar thinks he's better than the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is listed there. What did Nebuchadnezzar, with his vanity, build? Do you think he maybe did that because Daniel told him this dream about him being the golden head? And suddenly, Nebuchadnezzar builds a statue of himself, right? How big is the statue? Chapter 3, verse 1. It says he made an image of gold. We don't know exactly what the image was, but it was his, possibly his. 3 score, that's old language. How many cubits? 60 cubits. Now let's translate that to feet. About 90 feet. How many feet is in a story in a normal building?
10.
About 10 feet. So we have a 9-story tall statue. We can relate to that, can't we? We can visualize that. We've been around some large buildings, 9 stories tall. How wide was it? 6 cubits, which is 9 feet. Now you think about, does the ratio of that sound good as far as building is concerned? Yeah, you think it would topple over. I mean, I went and did some calculation. Even at the least amount, it doesn't tell us the depth, but even if we say, okay, the depth is 9 feet also. That's an assumption. That's not anything in there scriptural. We know it's 90 feet high, 9 feet wide, and let's assume 9 feet back. And assuming that this were a rectangular, just to give us some idea of what this gold statue was worth, you can translate that to cubic inches. And then I looked up to find out how many ounces of gold are in a cubic inch. I'm a number guy, so I like to do this kind of thing. It was fascinating. Using the idea of the statue being 90 by 9 by 9. The value at that gold rate today, $234 billion in a statue. A bit ostentatious. It makes you wonder, when I'm looking at all this gold and stuff that's talking about the scripture, I'm thinking, how was it so rare? Said they made the image of gold. Maybe it was Novell saying, maybe it was overlay. But we're going to look at something here that we know the scripture says was overlaid. But the scripture also tells us how much was used. And we'll quantify that too. Nebuchadnezzar used, and if this was that he had this as excess wealth, do you think people might be curious to come up close to that and chip off a piece? What if it's real fine gold? What's all you have to do? You run your fingernail. You ever watch people that are holding pure gold, at least 24 karat or higher? They're usually wearing gloves. Because gold, that is, I mean, I don't know, maybe higher than 24, but it is so soft that you can dig into your fingernails into it. Don't know the purity of this gold that he was using, but it's huge. Quantify it in your head. Get your image. That's one of the things I like about doing studies. You can image, put those in your head that you can see these stories in a different perception and understand the vanity of Nebuchadnezzar, which was, as we see later in the scripture, a big part of his downfall. He thought he was bigger than God. Let's look at some things. God and gold. What was God's opinion about gold? Let's look at one place here. No gold to God images. In the same chapter in Exodus where he gives the Ten Commandments, and what was one of those commandments? Chapter 20, verse 4. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I am a jealous God. I never thought about this scripture a little bit later in there where he says, verse 23, you shall not make anything to be with me gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourself. Interesting that he uses that. You shall not make anything images of me. And my Bible's capitalized, not that that's man's thing of doing it, but God speaking. And at that point in time, what were the children of Israel doing? They, a calf that they brought as they built that to be God. That they were wanting to worship the true God. But God's here telling them, you don't make graven images. And that right now, the people don't know that yet, but I'm sure they knew the concept of God probably didn't want that. But God made it law in the Ten Commandments. But he also said, don't do it even if you think it's for me. You can try to justify it all you want. I don't want it, God says. Don't make any golden or silver images. Especially of me.
Speaking out of heaven to the
yes.
People.
They were hearing it. It was on the stones only later that were given to Moses. Would God have held them accountable if he didn't already tell them a law of what they were allowed to do and what not to do? God found their actions sinful. He punished them. That means, yes, they knew that they weren't supposed to do that. God is a jealous God. The tabernacle. And I find this one interesting. You go back to that thing where it says, don't make any carved images or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath. But they were told to make a carved image. God told them to make a carved image. And I think we have to look at that heaven possibly as animal creatures. I'm not sure, but did God tell them to make a golden image of a heavenly creature?
Cherubim.
The cherubim. They made a golden image that was placed where? The cherubims were where? Now, they were on the mercy seat, which was on top of the Ark of the Covenant, and that was all in the most holy place, in the tabernacle. Was that the only place gold was used much? As you see in Exodus chapter 25, gold, gold, gold. Where did they get all this gold? Where did the children of Israel get it?
They took it from the Egyptians.
No, they didn't take it. The people were willing to give it to them. They weren't thieves. I think the Egyptians were trying to pay them off to get them out of there after those plagues. They willingly gave all the jewelry and the gold. God told them to ask the people, and the people willingly gave it to them. And they had all this gold and so forth that God knew they would need to do and build this tabernacle. So we find it again and again in here. You look at a lot of the same. A lot of stuff is overlaid. The Ark of the Covenant was overlaid acacia wood. There was gold all around it and so forth. Let's look at some other things here. Exodus chapter 28, the high priest's clothing. This was interesting to look at this. And the high priest, being Aaron, was wearing an ephod, which was the type of clothing wrapped around. He wore a turban. And I didn't ever really remember seeing this. What did he have hanging from the turban on his forehead? Well, down around 31, when it's talking about the robe and so forth, and it says it has bells of gold and pomegranates all around the base. Verse 35, and it shall be upon Aaron when he ministers, and its sound will be heard from he goes out of the holy place before the God. Verse 36, and you shall also make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And you shall put it on a blue cord, and it shall be on the turban, so it shall be on the front of the turban. So it shall be on Aaron's forehead. This thing was hanging from his head, a gold plate that said holiness to the Lord. And when would he wear that? Going into the most holy place. It may have been an eye shield in order to keep the glory of God and the blindingness. Because Aaron was not allowed to just go into the most holy place whenever he wanted either. It had to be specific times, specific ways. Because God had said many times, if he comes in there when he's not supposed to, God would kill him. This was an interesting place here. The ephod of Gideon. Gideon was a what? One of the judges. After he was done with the big battle of his 300 soldiers against the Midianites and wiping them out, the people wanted him to be what? Their king. And he said, nah. So he asked for, they went and they where they had ransacked the Midianites, he asked for everybody to give a gold earring out of that plunder. And he used that to craft, they call it an ephod, but it was really not something that was to be worn because it's a total metal. It was actually something set up there that unfortunately became a downfall because it was something that was worshipped. But the weight it says, it mentions in here of that ephod and the number of shekels that were involved with it, the weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold. That's about $1.2 million worth in today's. And as it says later, this was placed in the city, but it became a stumbling block. As it says in verse 27, it became a snare to Gideon and his house. Let's look at the temple real quick. 1 Kings 6, chapter, and also chapter 7, you'll see gold mentioned again and again. Between here and in 2 Chronicles, it describes that how large in the temple was the most holy place. No, not in the tabernacle. We're looking at the most holy place. 30 by 30. See, that or 20 by 20. I can't remember real quick. 2 Chronicles, let me look at that. From this, it's 20. That's what I thought. You threw me off, Joe. 20 by 20 by 20, which is 30 feet. That's what Joe was thinking. 30 feet, 20 cubits and so forth. So it's 30 feet, almost a squared off section. And it says in there that it was overlaid with gold. And then it's not until you get to 2 Chronicles that it tells you how much gold it took. 600 talents, verse 8, chapter 3, verse 8. 600 talents of fine gold was used to line the most holy place alone. Most holy place, there was $1.3 billion worth of gold. And there was more gold out in the vestibule. There was more gold in the sanctuary. All the you look in these scriptures, all of the instruments were solid gold. The candlesticks, everything solid gold. A lot of gold in there. Jesus in gold. We know Jesus got gold, received a birthday gift. Of those wise men that brought gold and what else? Frankincense and myrrh, spices, wealthy stuff. Interesting, in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus talking to his apostles and telling them when they go out and how they were supposed to hold themselves, he told them, don't take any gold with you. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts. And then he also talks about, he got very intricate into the oaths to the temple, Jesus, when he spoke that. And I find it fascinating, of all the four Gospels, only Matthew mentions gold. And Matthew was what in occupation? He was a tax collector. Yeah, Dirk? I don't know. I didn't look that up. What verse is that? I don't know. I'll look that up and see. In Matthew 23:16, woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? Jesus was upset with the Pharisees and their things they did. Peter's involvement, things that Peter learned from God, from Jesus. Yep. Silver and gold have I none. Who was he speaking to? The lame man. Well, what I have, I give unto you. And he healed him. We show the value of gold, not near as great as what the message of salvation was. And the great place there, you can see a lot of scriptures too, in the book of Revelation. Gold is from Genesis to Revelation. And that's the visual description of the New Jerusalem. And this is fascinating because this gold was so pure, it was transparent like glass. That's what the scripture says. The streets, the buildings. Now, do we believe that actual heaven is made out of physical gold? No. All of that is material will disappear, will be burned up. But what God will have there is, and I think John is only trying to look at the visual. He's trying to give us some visualization that we can compare it to. I've enjoyed the study. Hopefully, you'll do your own word searches from time to time. Pick a word and just go through. Like I said, I do the internet, look up things for history purposes, secular knowledge, and then understanding helps me understand the scripture a whole lot better. Thank you very much.